You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you love the show, please take a moment to go to Apple Podcasts and rate it or review it. It would mean so much to me. And if you'd like to join me today, the number here is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It is what's eating at you. It is not what you're eating that is the problem. It is why. And hi, Josh on Instagram. You are ready to talk to me? Call the show. I'm ready to talk to you. The lines are open. Sam is waiting to take your call. 323-203-0815. So while we're waiting for Josh to call, I had someone ask a question, which is, how do you deal with feeling fat and fat days? Okay, so here's the thing. Fat is not a feeling. Fat is a substance. It is not a feeling. So when you are feeling fat, ask yourself, what is that code for? Are you, is something too much for you? Is something upsetting you? If you're mad at yourself for eating too much or whatever you're upset about, what if you weren't mad at yourself for that? What if you were upset with someone in your life? What might that be? So if you are feeling fat, quote unquote, remember, fat is not a feeling. Fat is a way of distracting ourselves from other kinds of emotions we might have about other people or situations. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Dr.
Welcome
Nina.
Welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Last night, I decided to have a very large meal. And I realized that I'm not doing as great as I thought. This is actually a very difficult thing I'm going through. Even though we talked about it last week, I still find myself kind of helpless to do anything about my eating. And it's creeping back into my life. We talked about it last week as being something that I want, that I'm filling myself with food because I'm lacking in my life in some way. And yet, even knowing that, I find it very difficult to overcome.
Of course, because knowing it is only the first step. Insight only gives us insight. It doesn't change things. It's like that Oprah aha moment. Oh, how I wish it were true that you would go, aha, I realize what's going on, and then everything changes. Only it doesn't. So the first step is insight. And then if you realize, okay, you're feeling lonely. It's not enough to say, okay, I'm feeling lonely. Then you have to deal with the loneliness. You have to, or the emptiness. You have to find a different way of responding to yourself, of connecting with people, of being with you, right? Creating a solitude instead of feeling lonely. Lonely is when you're just alone and you feel apart from the world. Solitude is when you're alone with yourself, with a supportive, encouraging, kind part of you that's available to you. So yes, I'm not surprised that insight isn't doing it for you.
Yeah, you mean go deeper maybe into the realm of feelings. That resonates with me. Actually, you're sort of reading my mind a bit, because that's actually what I was thinking about, even though I didn't say it to you. I was thinking about that last night. And then I was thinking about this other idea, which is, I'm wondering if I'm eating because I don't like food. and I don't want to speak with, you know, for anyone who has a eating disorder, any eating difference or anything like that. But if food is troubling, we might end up hating food. And if we hate food, then we might want to eat food. And the reason why we would eat food if we hate food is because it sort of counteracts our feelings towards food. Does that make sense?
I think that all of that is a mental gymnastics that is designed to keep you focused on food and not on feelings and conflicts and all the messiness of being a human in this world. Right, got very intellectual just now, and it may very well be true. And often people tell me, I'm eating things I don't even like, or people will eat like raw stuff, or you know, uncooked oatmeal even. And it's not about food. It's not about liking food. Binge eating is not about liking food. It's about using food in some way to resolve something. So what is that something? That's what you have to stay focused on.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's just, you know, like I was, maybe I wasn't clear. I want to say what I was saying again in just another way. Like, in other words, food is the problem, but if I eat food, now food isn't a problem anymore.
Food is not
I'm
the problem.
Eating, after all.
Food is not the problem.
Right,
food
but,
is
but that's
the solution
that's
to the problem.
Right, right.
Yeah. Food is not the problem. And when we focus on it as the problem, and I understand, Josh, you're recognizing, oh, food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem. Exactly. The problem is loneliness. The problem is feeling unfulfilled. The problem is feeling disconnected. The problem is anxiety. The problem is inability to respond to yourself in a kind, loving, supportive way. These are the problems. Food is a solution to it, but it's a very temporary solution that doesn't really resolve anything.
Yeah. So I was thinking that, not just thinking that food was the problem, I mean, you're going to have to really, really rattle my cage for me to stop thinking that food is not the problem. I mean, I feel like that's very ingrained into my psyche.
You know, it's a lot easier to make food the problem. I've shared this before, and I'm going to share it again because sometimes it helps to hear things from that other people have said. I shared with you, I've shared on the show before about the time that the woman came to my group when I used to have groups in my office, and she said at some point, "Wait, are you telling me that there's something going on in my head and my heart, and that's why I'm binging on food?" And I said, "Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying." And she said, "How dare you? I'm a food addict." And she got up and she walked out, leaving the whole group kind of open mouth going, whoa, because she did not want to deal with the truth of the matter, which is that her problem was not food. She is not addicted to food. She's maybe addicted to using food or to eating to resolve it. I don't like the term addiction. I find it very pathologizing. Food is a way of distracting, numbing, symbolically filling. It does so many things, but it is not the problem. It's an answer to the problem.
Yeah. And so we would need to get to the emotion surrounding, for example, my emotion that might be lurking behind my strongly held belief that food is the problem. And if I could just get rid of food by eating it, I've solved my binging, which actually is a beautiful contradiction if you look at it. But there would be emotion in there.
So I would say if my magic wand worked, which, you know, it does, just slowly, and I could take away all thoughts of food and eating and all of that from your mind, what would be left? What would you be worrying about if you weren't thinking about what you are wanting to eat or did eat or won't eat? What's left? What are you What's bothering you? What's upsetting you? What's worrying you?
I feel like it's a feeling of mourning surrounding human connection. Like I have to leave or just walk away from, you know, something or someone who's not serving me. And we talked about that last week in terms of the politics and how everything seems to be changing moment to moment. And I think that that's probably what it is, just to give it up, allow myself to mourn the loss, to feel, which mourning really means feeling, but not so much as depression. I feel like depression is the absence of feeling. It's sort of a sick state of the mind, whereas feeling it.
Depression is not an absence of feeling or a sick state of the mind. Depression is incredible sadness. So mourning is not only sadness. You're absolutely right on that score. Mourning, there's a process of mourning. Denial, which is, you know, denial. This is not like, no, it's not that thing. It's food. Denial. Then anger. Anger. Why is this person or these people who are politically different, now it's causing this chasm between you and you are feeling disconnected from them, and how upsetting that is. Anger. And then bargaining. Well, if I do this and I say that, maybe they'll change. Or if I do this or I say that, maybe I'll feel different. If I eat this, maybe I'll feel different. Whatever bargaining is, which is some form of if, then. And then depression, which is, nothing's going to change. It is how it is. It is what it is. It has to be faced. It's sad. It's upsetting. It's depressing. And then when you process all of that, you get to acceptance. Okay. Got to let go of, in your case, got to let go of this friendship or change my expectations, but it doesn't hurt as much. So it goes from like a stab wound to sort of a scratch emotionally.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm feeling the scratch, but the scratch actually has to be worked through and given time to heal. Otherwise, it never will heal.
Everything has to be, worked through and healed. Everything. And binging is a way of distracting from what needs to be felt and processed. And when I say felt, I don't mean sit in feelings. A lot of people say, I got to just sit in my feelings. No, sitting in feelings is a terrible experience. Who wants to do that? I certainly wouldn't want to. Nobody wants to sit in feelings. But when we respond to our feelings, when we feel our feelings and respond to ourselves. So if we, for example, cry and then respond to ourselves, if we just cry and there's no response, it feels terrible. But if we cry and then we tell ourselves, but you know what, of course I feel bad. Who wouldn't in this situation? There are so many reasons why I feel this way. And then you reassure yourself, but I'm not always going to feel this way. I've gone through a lot. I'm going to learn something from this and I'm going to feel better one day soon, hopefully. Then you feel better.
Yeah. And I feel like it could, you know, have to do with the way we were raised. You know, we're taught things that maybe we carry to even today from many, many decades ago. I mean, you know, 100 years ago, but not quite 100 years because we're not that old, but a long time ago. And we are still behaving in a way that we've never checked in on to wonder if this was really rational or crazy or anything.
Well, nothing is, it's not about irrational and it's certainly not crazy. We learn certain things from our experiences in the past, and then we're so afraid of repeating them that we tend to repeat them to have agency over them, or we think we see them coming. If you've been horribly rejected as a child, you're going to be so guarded against rejection that you may see rejection coming even if it's not, or you may, unbeknownst to you, I'm not speaking directly to you, Josh, but you may seek out rejecting people, hoping to heal the original wound by getting the rejecting person to love you. But all it does is repeat the past. When we mourn and go through a grieving process of being rejected, we don't repeat it. And when people are unsafe because they can reject you or hurt you, food, which in our psyche represents people, becomes where we, that's where we go to.
Okay, so that makes sense. That fits in exactly with the way I'm thinking about it. I do believe that there's emotions there. And what you just said is the emotion gets blocked by the food. And I think that's exactly right for me. I think that's exactly what happens to me. Instead of feeling, I'm eating. This is actually happening at a very, very deep level. I feel like getting to the unconscious would just be the first step, because this is actually going on. Well, it is unconscious. I should just say it is unconscious.
Well, and the whole point is to make the unconscious conscious and to really be a detective of the mind and look at not what you're eating, but why. What is this doing for you? How is this helping you cope? What is it expressing? Again, it's not always about comfort. If you eat so much that you're in physical pain, hey, you're probably converting emotional pain to physical pain. So you want to be really curious about why you're doing whatever it is that you're doing, instead of focusing on the behavior.
Yeah, and I think the learned behavior of using food to dull emotions is not something we learned last week. It was something we learned decades ago in childhood.
And what can be learned, what is learned, and it's different for everyone, but what is learned can be unlearned, and then you can learn a new way. So in other words, Josh, there is hope. So
yeah,
this week, I really want you to pay attention to, you know, if you start focusing on food or eating or focusing on what you're eating, ask yourself, what's this taking me away from? What am I not experiencing or thinking about if I'm focusing on food or eating?
Yes. And I also want to just add that what is happening last week or this week is our relationships to other people, our adult relationships. And I feel like if we're using food as a way to deal and cope with those relationships, even though it might mirror back to a relationship from early childhood, say a mother or father, in the current relationship, we might be using food not in a good way, where we could hopefully get deeper and more connected with people.
Absolutely right, Josh. And I would just suggest that rather than talk about we, I want you to think about you. And what's it doing for you? Less about the general society and more about specifically about you. Because when we talk about we and we're doing this, you are not feeling something specific to yourself.
Yeah, and I think I just want to say for me, it's probably a feeling of despair. I feel like almost all human emotion can come back to despair. It can be existential. It can be just, here we are, humans on Earth rotating around the sun. What's going on? But I think it at the most of it, for me, is going to be a despair.
For you, it is despair. And that means that your despair needs your attention. When you are able to validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. That's how we comfort ourselves, right? My very technique. When you do that, the despair is felt and responded to. It's not just enough to feel feelings. We then have to respond to it. So identifying the feelings, expressing them, expressing that despair, and then responding to it.
Yeah, so I'm going to work on that this week. I really appreciate your time. And I feel like it's almost all despair or all mourning. It's all sadness for me. I don't know if I'm depressed or not, but I feel like all emotion comes back to just basic sadness almost in a sense. But I don't know.
Then go to page 45 of my book, the Binge Cure. I know you have it. And you will see prompts for, you know, anger, sadness, loneliness, guilt, all that shame, how you express it. And by the way, depression and despair can be a normal part of the human experience. It doesn't mean, oh, you're depressed. If you're depressed, some people have sort of chronic major depression. Some people are depressed because of the state of the world or the state of their world. So just, you know, don't label it. Just express it and respond to it.
Yeah, I think that really makes sense to me. And I think I can do a better job of loving myself. And even though I use food to love myself, obviously there's some issues there that may not be the best way to go about doing it.
You are using food to cope, and you can find other ways to cope.
Right. Okay. Great.
I believe in you, Josh. You got it.
Oh, I'm doing it. It's just the last, you know, these meals seem to pop up, and I'm going to get control over it. But it's hard. It's because the emotions are there, you know?
Yeah. Don't try to get control over it. Ask yourself, why am I doing this? What is the purpose of it? What is this doing for me? Use my food mood formula to focus on, okay, what is it that I need to address? Is it smooth and creamy and I need comfort? Is it filling, you know, filling foods and I need to address loneliness or emptiness? Is it crunchy and I want to look at anger? Is it candy and there's, you know, I need sweetness in my life? Start there and then express it and then respond to it. And I look forward to hearing from you hopefully next week and seeing how it goes.
Yeah. That sounds good. I just want to say really quickly, I really love food and I probably also really hate food. And there's an ambivalence towards food that we can talk about next week.
Okay. I look forward to that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh. Yes, we often, Josh, if you're probably seeing this, but Carly Nash is writing on Instagram, I'm sending you a big hug. You are so tenacious. Yes. As are you, Carly Gash, as is everybody. It really is a frenemy. Remember, it does something for you. Eating is a friend. Eating, binging, emotional eating is a friend. It does something for you, but it also hurts you. But the good news is when you can figure out what it is doing for you and find new ways of doing that, if you need comfort, new ways of comforting yourself. If you're lonely, new ways of being with that loneliness or depression or anger or whatever it is that you're experiencing at the time, new ways of being with your conflict, then you don't need food to be a friend. Because remember, it's a frenemy. It helps you, but it also hurts you. And a lot of people feel like it is their best friend and their worst enemy. When I was struggling, you guys know I was the poster child for eating disorders. That's why I do this work. It was my best friend and it was my worst enemy. And that was the problem. But when I found new ways of being a friend myself, then everything changed for good. And that's the other thing I really want to impress upon you, that it's for good. Once you crack the code and once you find new ways of being in response to yourself and others, and things will change with food for good. This is not something you have to deal with forever. So many people think it is. No, it's not. It is not. It's like if you keep plucking a weed, yeah, it's going to keep growing back. Of course it is. You'll pluck those weeds forever in your garden. But if you dig them out the root, that weed is gone for good. That's what we're doing. Some emotional gardening. Or as Aaron said, Aaron left me a message on, I just have to look at it. She left me a message on Instagram, not a message. She left some kind of comment. She said, I'm like a plumber. Like you're an emotional plumber. You're rooting. I have to see what she said. I can't, after all this, I can't find it. Oh, she said, this is her talking. I don't need help. I can stop this on my own. That was before I learned your way, but it was like I was trying to unclog a toilet without any proper tools or plumbing knowledge. Dr. Nina is basically a disordered eating plumber. Hand her the plunger to unclog your life. How awesome is that? Hi, Carly Gash.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How do you hear me?
I hear you now. I hear you pretty nice. Well.
Hello. So good to see you. So good to hear you. My brain and mind was like a sourdough, really unshaped. I was struggling. I woke up at 3, then slept like, you know, it was hard. And you know what I do when I have like, when I have this moment when I'm lost and I cannot figure out what's going on, what I'm feeling, just in a very frozen, lost, confused state, I just turn on your audiobook, The Binge Cure. And of course, I'm obviously dissociating at the moment a lot. And I just start listening to your voice and it kind of tunes me back. And when I started listening to radio show, it just got even better. And you and Josh were talking. I just got back into like normal place. Dr. Nina, it took me several hours. Right now it's like 11, almost 11:30 a.m. But my job starts at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. I start here in Los Angeles. How many hours? I was not just doing anything. 7 hours took me to just put myself together. But I'm planning to kind of accelerate the skill. It's already good that I'm not running away from it or like trying to distract myself. I'm not feeding in feelings. I guess I'm observing. This past 2 weeks, I was observing my feelings a lot because just, you know, the concept of feelings, it was very not new for me, but I was not aware of it in a sense how you teach it, how it should be organically felt and dealt.
We live in a society that says emotions are bad. You are strong if you don't feel your feelings, and somehow you're weak if you are, when actually the opposite is true. But what do we do with those feelings? What do we do with our feelings, which are reactions to situations? They are not character flaws. So what do?
Exactly.
We stuff them, we starve them, we gamble them, we drink them, we do all kinds of things. Different people do different things. And so I'm glad that you are normalizing your human experience of having emotions.
I exactly wanted to say that, you know, I'm coming from that other country. And when you're in survival mechanism, I don't know, maybe there are survivors who can also incorporate like feeling. But I have experienced just surviving nonstop and like feelings were not on the plate. I'm not on, all my metaphors are today is like food and table related. you know, it was not even in the equation. But now I'm kind of bringing it and it's my life is getting, I would say much, I'm making it much better. Just letting myself feel. And I also want to apologize. And if you ever talk to Dr. Bob Rich, when I called, I was so hard on him. But unfortunately, Bob Rich just had me at my hardest, probably one of the hardest, worst periods when everything was hurting so much. Everything, just me being after him, I guess I was just looking for some help, couldn't verbalize it. And after I actually listened to your show, I went and bought his book right away and started reading it. And he helped me so much from his book. And whatever he's writing, I resonated and related so much. And I'm like, damn, now all the people will hear this bad stuff. But actually, he's just so good. So I didn't mean that. I was just hurting too much and biting people around me.
Okay, well, that's good, but let's stay with people who are listening might not have heard that show, but so let's stay with what is it that you are dealing with today?
Calling about. Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. What would I do in my life without you? No matter how much I distract, avoid, you will still stick to the point. And of course, I called you because I couldn't put myself together. I'm still struggling with accepting my own success. Of all, I sabotage my, you know, like slimming process, but it's not even about slimming process. So I started this job. I'm working as a, doing business, you know, in transportation. I have 10 years experience in international. I'm very experienced. I'm good. If you check my LinkedIn profile, it's pretty impressive. So at some point, I did job great here. I made so much money, honestly, first time in my life, this big amount of money in 1 month. And I'm like, whoa. And of course, I started sabotaging big time, like, you know, like the pattern. But I'm working on the pattern. So right now, I also figured out that I can actually hire and teach people. And I like I always consult with this guy who has the same agency for the same company. And I'm like, hey, how did it work when you started hiring people? He said, I couldn't hire anyone. And I'm like, okay, I will not rely on his experience. Let me still try. So I posted the posting. People started calling. I had so many interviews. Two girls are jumped in. They are so eager to work. And I'm like, wait a minute. I actually cannot listen to other people's experiences. And other people's failures doesn't mean that I will fail. Because that was my like experiences in life. Like everyone was trying to impose on me their
failures. And I'm Carly like, Gash, Carly Gash, you're saying a lot and you're going really fast. And what I want to slow you down, because what mm-hmm. happens when we go really fast is we miss whatever it is that we need to pay attention to. And you're saying Thank a lot you. Of things. And one of the things you said was that you made a lot of money. And that you feel yourself sabotaging that success. And then you went on to the story about these other people. So I want to just stay with that because got to slow down.
So hard.
So
I know you will stop me, but this internal voice is what I'm struggling with. It's a fear of success because I hear the voice, this nasty voice, which says, oh, now you found out that you are such a high, like a experienced, valuable professional that big companies are after you. I mean, they were always after me since I started working.
Stop. Let's take this one step at a time. Notice the pronoun you just used, and notice how your voice changes. Here you are talking. I can't do your accent, but you're talking about what this and this and this and this and this, and then you use this voice and you say, "So you
voice,
like it's so mean. It's so mean." So notice how you went from I made all this money and I'm feeling so whoa to you.
Dr. Nina, thank you so much. I love it. Dr. Nina, you need to be a Hollywood actress because you are such a professional in emotions. And back to myself, that was a nice digression and avoidance. And I will stick to digging my painful stuff, my painful situation. So, yes, it's you. I know that I'm going to say you. And I also want to share my progress. So before this, you was like absolutely nasty tone, you know, like very nasty, very like, you know, I don't know what I, my progress is. Some yes, I well, hear you, but less. But and
Carly
also
Gash.
The
Carly Gash, you don't need to explain the nasty tone because you just said it. You, who do you think you are? Not that you said those words.
Oh, is
right?
it still so, nasty, Dr. Nina? Because so, I thought it got better.
Okay, it was still it got maybe a little. I think it's getting less frequent. But it was still really harsh. The way we talk to ourselves, the way we talk to ourselves affects how we feel. The way we feel then affects what we do. So if you are saying, oh my God, I made all this money. I feel so good. It's more money I've ever made in my life. Who do you think you are? You think you're so great.
Yes,
oh,
exactly.
Now you're going to feel bad. Then
you
you're going to
eat. Exactly. It says, who do you think you are? Exactly the phrase. It says, now I'm hiring people, you know, which means that I may even not work and make still the same money. It says, oh,
okay.
You started hiring people. Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? So,
oh,
Carly,
you have a big company.
I don't need to hear anymore. And you don't need to say, I'm stopping because I don't need to hear anymore. And you don't need to say it because when you say it, when you keep talking to yourself in that voice, you give it so much energy and you give it so much power. What you want to look at is, what are the messages about success? That you don't deserve success, that success is somehow unwarranted, that it's going to be taken away, you're going to be found out, you don't deserve it. All of these ideas that you might have about success you want to challenge.
It's just so hard. I mean, it's hard, but I will do it, of course. It's challenging. I will accept the challenge. And success, I guess I think being successful for me, in my head, I tie it to being used, you know, because people change the way they talk to you when you have money. Some people, not all of them. And I started noticing it in people, even my family members. I don't like it, Dr. Nina. X started calling me because we're in the same industry.
Okay, so right there. If success means people are going to use you, they're going to try to take your money, they're going to be nice to you to get you to help them out, yes, and give them money, whatever it is, then isn't that a good reason for you to not be successful? And isn't it also interesting that you were talking about not feeling successful with weight loss? So often we take areas in our life, in this case, your conflict about success, and then we displace it onto food, body image, stuff like that. So instead of, I'm having trouble with monetary success and holding on to that good feeling, it becomes, look how I'm not letting myself lose weight. Look how you're not letting yourself have abundance gets put aside, and it's, look at how I'm struggling in this area.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because I also stopped working for almost like 10 days. I mean, I'm not even like actively working. I'm just procrastinating and terrified and frozen. And this is the first time, Dr. Nina, I actually found out that I'm scared. I'm not scared, Dr. Nina. It's just so disgusting, and it's such a disgusting and unpleasant feeling when people use you for, whenever they switch. I hate that, Dr. Nina. And I think that's why I kept myself poor, because I had this idea when I grew up, like, that poor people are authentic people. And those messages that whenever people get rich, they change themselves, or like they change, or they become arrogant. Okay. Like a lot of negative.
So you have taken these ideas. So you've taken these ideas that poor people who struggle are somehow authentic and good.
Authentic, yes.
And people
because they have nothing is at stake, you know. So I keep myself in the position, in the state.
Uh-huh. Yes. So poor people are authentic and good, and successful people are somehow not good anymore, inauthentic, and they will be used. So you have taken this as some kind of reality. Even though intellectually, I think you know it's not the case. Let me finish. Intellectually, you know it's not the case. It feels real. And what you have to do is go back and look at, how did you come to have these beliefs? How did you come to believe that somehow you're noble and good if you're struggling and poor, and you're either bad or setting yourself to be used if you are successful? These are the ideas you have to challenge. And when you do that, you will allow yourself to have abundance, and you won't sabotage yourself by feeling bad about what you're eating or not working.
Allowing abundance. I think, Dr. Nina, you pointed my laser to the very right direction. And I found out, of course, those are my family members and people I grew up around, who for whatever reasons were not successful, never tried. They could, I don't know, drink alcohol, some of our neighbors, and just sit there on the bench and say, oh, don't even try anything. Everything is so useless. Of course, and you know, it's kind of message. And also, I just found out, I also have a big ton of anger at this kind of people, because they misled a lot of kids, and they themselves are now 50, 60 years old and unsuccessful and sick and poor. And they also like really disturb many kids, whereas this is not true of life. In life, if you try, if you do something, you don't have to be smart, but if you keep doing, keep working, you will always have results. And now I'm thinking, Dr. Nina, how can I be mean and successful if I'm already giving an opportunity to have job to five people, like three to five people? How can I be a bad person if I'm helping people to actually make money and be happy and move on with their lives?
You're challenging these ideas, and that's what you have to keep doing. First, you identify the rule that you have about life that you don't even realize that you're abiding by. But now you've just realized it. Oh, you're somehow a good person if you're struggling and poor. No, you know what? There are plenty of people who are struggling and poor, and they're jerks. They're not good people at all. And there are plenty of people who are well off and successful and have financial abundance, and they're you know what? There are also good people who are poor and good people who are rich. There are bad people who are poor and bad people who are rich.
Thank you.
You have to detach the idea of a good person tied to the amount of money that they have. So
I need to do that. Thank you so much.
Think about that. Call me next week and let us know how it goes.
Oh, thank you so much. I will, Dr. Nina. I feel much better. Thank you. And thank you, Josh, for sharing. I so appreciate every time you call. You are a big time resilient person, and you're a doer, and you're so strong. I love you, Josh. I'm sending you a big hug. Keep doing.
Thank you, Carly Gash. And you know what? I want to say one other thing, which is that Carly Gash, please be as nice, as loving, as understanding, and as supportive of yourself as you are of Josh.
Wouldn't that be a great world? I'll do my best.
Okay.
Thank you,
Dr. Nina. Progress.
Take care. And I'm sending you a hug and to all the listeners. You people, you guys are great. Thank you. Take care. Have a great day.
You too, Carly Gash.
Mm-hmm.
Bye for now. Isn't it interesting how we wouldn't think that our ideas about success or, money would have anything to do with what goes on with eating. But everything that goes on in our life impacts our relationship with food. When we realize that we have these ideas, then we can challenge those ideas. When we don't realize we have these ideas, or we don't see the connection, and we take them as truths without even realizing it, it has so much power over our lives. But when we can say, I can see why I'm doing this. I'm sabotaging myself so that I feel bad about myself, so that I feel like a good person. Then you can challenge that idea. So, food for thought. Okay, someone else, Kylene, wanted me to address the idea of forgiveness. She said, "Do I have to forgive myself when I binge eat?" No. We forgive something that we do that's wrong. We forgive something that, when someone breaks a law, or they treat us badly, or they hurt us, or whatever. Forgiveness suggests that we're doing something wrong. And if you feel like you're doing something wrong when you're binging, then already you're going to feel bad about yourself for doing it. When you look at it as, okay, let me be a detective of the mind. I always say I'm a detective of the mind. And we're going to solve the mystery of why you're binging or why you're emotionally eating. Detectives do not judge clues as bad. They don't say, that's a bad, nasty clue. Can't believe that clue. No, we say, wow, that is an interesting clue. That is something really that we want to keep in our minds. So if you're binging, that's a clue that something is going on inside you. If you're turning to food, you are turning away from something else, or you are expressing something. Again, it, using my example from earlier, if you're eating so much that your stomach hurts and you're in pain, think about it. Are you turning emotional pain to physical pain? If so, how is that unforgivable, or how is that something you need to forgive? No, it's something you need to take note of. It's something you need to say, aha, now I need to attend to my emotional pain. So no, we do not have to forgive ourselves for emotional eating or binging. We need to have compassion and understand, where is it coming from? It's not what you're eating, it's why. It's not what you're eating that is the problem, it is what's eating at you. And if you forgive yourself for the behavior, then you're focusing too much on food and not about the reasons why you turn to food in the first place. So it's not, oh, I'm going to forgive myself for eating that whole pizza. It's, okay, let me have compassion and be curious, not critical. Be curious. Why did I eat all that pizza? Why couldn't I stop? What is it that I'm really hungry for? What is it that I'm feeling? What is it that's going on? Am I filling a void? Am I turning emotional pain to physical? Am I feeling lonely? Am I distracting myself? If I weren't mad at myself for eating pizza, what or who would I be mad at? Ask yourself questions and you will discover the answers. So no. Also, Kylene, you did not ask that, but I'm about to say it anyway. Forgiveness. There's a lot of idea that we have to forgive. You know, some things are just not forgivable. Some things are not forgivable. You can come to terms with it. Things that happen to us. I don't think child abuse is forgivable. I don't think child sexual abuse is forgivable. And you know, and a lot of people feel bad because they haven't been able to forgive the person who hurt them. Well, guess what? You don't have to. Some things are not forgivable. And don't feel bad about yourself because you can't find it in your heart to forgive someone who treated you badly. You have to heal from what happened. You have to heal from whatever hurt you badly. And I'm not suggesting that you walk around in a state of anger towards or hurt towards someone who treated you badly. It's about healing that wound. But healing that wound, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, stages of grief, does not include forgiveness. So I just wanted to add that. Because it's something I come across so often. And then you feel bad. If you feel bad about yourself because you can't forgive someone and you don't feel like you're a forgiving enough person, then you feel bad about yourself. And then if you can't then comfort yourself, what are you going to do? Turn to food, maybe, to feel better, to distract. So as you can see, I feel very strongly about this. And I hope that clarifies this for you. You do not have to forgive. You have to heal. And if it comes to binging behavior, you do not have to forgive yourself because you didn't do something unforgivable. You're trying to help yourself in a way that's also hurting yourself. It's a way of coping. It is not it's not a crime. We forgive crimes. We forgive terrible actions. It's a way of coping that's just a bad coping strategy. Because yeah, it hurt. It helps for a second or for minutes or for a day, but then it hurts us. So it's not to be forgiven. It's to be understood. Hopefully I covered that adequately. I think so. And guess what? That is our show for the day. I cannot believe it. That was the fastest 50 minutes ever. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio. You can listen live on LA Talk Radio or LA Talk Radio's Facebook page, or I also live stream on Instagram. And you can listen later on Apple Podcasts. And again, I mentioned my food mood formula with Josh earlier. If you want to get my free food mood formula guidebook, head on over to my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com. Or if you're on Instagram, it is the link is in my bio. Go ahead and grab your free copy of my food mood formula guidebook. That's going to help you so much as you start to heal your relationship with yourself and with food. Take good care, stay curious, not critical, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.